This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a wolf's fun, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flash in the shot. What a goal!
Hello everyone, I hope you're all doing well. The only 3-2 comeback we'll be talking about on this episode is our victory away at Villa Park this season. I hope you've gone over the defeat to Leeds the other week. I got with me tonight Tom, Cheltenham Tom.
Hello, nice to see you. Tom, I did listen to the last podcast, Stu, the posh Tom. I mean, anything south of the West Midlands is seen as posh, but I'll take it.
Yeah, there's Hard Angle Tom and Cheltenham Tom slash Posh Tom. And as people have hopefully seen today, we've got a special guest with us. Former Wolves legend, now podcast rival, maybe?
No, Dangerous never.
Dave Edwards. How are we doing, Dave?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No, it's good to have you on. I've been consuming your podcast in the Stiffs quite regularly over the... The last week I finished the best and worst players episodes on my commute home from work today. How are you finding that world, you, Sam and Gav?
It's really good. So we just started it just as sort of three mates who played together. And thought, well, let's just give it a go. We can tell some old stories. Our idea was we'd just go down the pub, have a few drinks and have a chat. But you quickly realise there's a hell of a lot more that goes into it than that. So it's kind of consumed our lives a little bit, trying to get it all sorted. Luckily, we got a guy who used to work at Shrewsbury, who was head of media, a guy called Ian Whitfield, along to basically show us how to do it all. And he helps with the editing and the video stuff. So it's been really good, really enjoyable. But I didn't realise how much work goes into it, as you guys will be well aware of.
Yeah, we've been doing it for what I'd class as too long now, and the Wolves fancast has been going since 2007, just before you joined Wolves, Dave. So that's how long we've been going. It's quite, we were niche before niche even podcasts even existed.
Say, you were the proper early adopters, weren't you?
Yeah, we were sort of slating you guys before you even realised what podcasts were even about. It's been sort of an international break, which I'm not really a fan of. What about yourself, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty fickle when it comes to these types of things. I mean, obviously, when it comes to a big major tournament, you get on board. But I think I watched the first 10-20 minutes of the Ivory Coast match last night, and then my small daughter started crying, and I kind of just switched off. And I think I checked the score about lunchtime today, But Dave, Wales did well last week, didn't they? That Bale free kick was brilliant. And there's something about the Welsh team that you kind of can't help but get behind. They're the good time boys, aren't they, really?
Yeah, I think that makes it an exciting international break. I always think with England, even the qualifiers, because they're expected to win, the games can be very dull, can't they? And the atmosphere inside Wembley never seems overly great for those sort of games, especially when it's too friendly. Whereas Wales, I think, I don't know, just something different, being a smaller stadium and us massively punching above our weight over the last sort of 7 or 8 years. And I must say, Thursday night, it was the best atmosphere I've ever been in. And that's through my whole career, playing, watching, everything. It was just unbelievable. And obviously when Gaz turned up and put those two goals in as well, it just made it extra special.
I did listen to obviously your best and worst players episode today, Dave. And like you just mentioned in there, Gareth Bale, he's so extraordinary. I think that's another reason why fans of the Welsh community get so buzzing for seeing the national side, because he's sort of a once-in-a-lifetime player, isn't he?
He is. He's the best player to ever play for Wales. I think he's sort of ahead of... I know Giggs has won a lot of domestic trophies, but I think he's done a lot more worldwide or European, especially, than Ryan Giggs. And as an actual player, I think he has the ability to carry a team, which no other Welsh person has been able to do before. I don't want to be sort of too down on us, but we are a pretty average team, but who sets themselves up really well, are coached extremely well. but who have a real sort of patriotism, sort of die for the cause. But then you sprinkle Gareth Bale into that, and all of a sudden, we've got someone who can win a game for us. We've got the likes of Aaron Ramsey, Joe Allen, these sorts of players who are up there as well. But without Gareth Bale, we would just be a good team. It would compete and would get some draws and a few wins. But Gareth Bale just takes you to that next level. As you saw on Thursday night, without him, we probably don't win that game.
Obviously, do a lot of coverage now for the Welsh national side. It's a bit difficult to, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but are Wales literally one of those countries that can beat anyone on their day? Is that what it's all about? Getting to Qatar is literally, is there any team that you think Wales come up against and think, there's no way we're not winning this?
We'd always give ourselves a puncher's chance, because I think we stay in games. I think as a team, and the strategy which the Chris Coleman did and Rob Page does now is all about being solid. We do play some good stuff, but it's about being solid, not conceding many goals, and then you just hope that an Aaron Ramsey or a Gareth Bale, a few younger lads, to be fair, now coming into it, the likes of Harry Wilson, Brendan Johnson at Forest is real lively. We've got a few players now who can go and do something a little bit special at the other end. And that's why I think we've always got a chance. You can see that in 2016, even in the last Euros, we always give Belgium a game. We seem to play them all the time. But yeah, I don't think we're a team that the big ones would really want to play, because it is a real banana skin for them.
I started to feel my age when I watched the Nottingham Forest versus Liverpool FA Cup tie the other day, when I realised that David Johnson was Brennan Johnson's dad.
Yeah, I know.
Unbelievable. Let's quickly get back to Wolves a second, because obviously you did an episode with Conor Cody recently. He featured for England the weekend in a 2-1 win against Switzerland. Does it still sort of shock you how far he's gone?
Oh, it's incredible, isn't it? It's incredible. I actually played golf with John Ruddy today, and we were speaking about Conor, and it's just his rise has just been incredible. And of course, there's a little bit of luck in it, being right place, right time, right manager, all them sort of things. But he's grasped it with both hands, and he is firmly Wolves captain now, sort of the one of the main men at Wolves, purely on what he does on the football pitch, which is amazing. You can only get yourself so far by being a good lad, a good talker, all those things. You've got to have the ability on the pitch, and Conor's showing that week in, week out. I think fans would have questioned him over the last couple of years. Is he going to be able to maintain it? Can we bring in better centre-halves? And I just think he gets better and better each season, and he's becoming irreplaceable. And he goes far beyond what you can do on the football pitch for Wolves. I think what he does for the whole football club in terms of off the pitch, the way he talks about it, I think every club in the Premier League would like a Conor Cody as their captain, just because he brings the whole community together that much. He really is the best person Wolves could have leading it. I do think all the fans really appreciate that. But he has to do it on the pitch as well. It's not to say you can easily just be a good guy off it and do all the right things, but doing it on the pitch is important, and he's definitely doing that.
Setting standards and professionalism, that's pretty much where he's got to. I mean, obviously, you mentioned a bit of luck, but since Wolves went to that three at the back, he's really made that position his own. And I don't think there's really a centre-back in the Premier League that could be trusted to do that role better than him. Obviously, you've got Virgil van Dijk, just head and shoulders better defensively, but I don't think there's a better player in the Premier League to play that centre-back role in the three, Tom.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that I kind of echo what Dave says there, that Cody is, I think he's earned his seat at the table there in the England squad. And obviously, depending on formation, depending on the different choices that Gareth Southgate makes, it's not unreasonable to think that Conor Cody can go and start games and lead games. We've seen him captain the side before. But also, I think Dave's right as well. It's taken a little bit of luck, a few decisions that people above him have made, and the managers, and certain situations in the team that he's been in, for him to get to where he is. But at the same time, it's grabbing the opportunity with both hands and showing that you've got the quality to be there and stay there. So yeah, just really pleased for him. And it's always nice to see a Wolves player in an England shirt. I mean, before Cody, who was that? It was Matt Jarvis, wasn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, Dave, you was in the Wolves squad at that time when Matt Jarvis made his debut for England. That was a big shock for the club back then. And it's just extraordinary how far we've come in such a short space of time, isn't it?
It is. It was amazing for Java when it happened. And I think still looking back, it did seem crazy that Wolves, a club that I was playing for, had someone in the England squad. We had a lot of Irish boys. We had a few Welsh boys and me and Wayno and Boxy and people like that. But to get someone in the England squad, that shows how well the football club was doing at the time. More Java, he was lighting up things on that left wing, wasn't he? He had a real good season the year we got relegated on a personal point of view. Deservedly got it, but again, he only got one cap, Jarvo did. So it shows again how good Connor is, that he's not only got a chance, got a cap, but he stayed in there. He's been part of a Euro squad. He'll be a part of a World Cup squad. He's won the armband for England. Incredible. And Wolves fans must be so happy to have their own player go into a World Cup, go into Euros. It's great representation for the club.
Yeah, buzzing helps the club to bring in a higher calibre of players, which they may have struggled with in years gone by. We're not trying to be biased on our social media, but we did plug yesterday that you can get odds of 5-2 for Connor Cody to be in the World Cup squad in 2022. And for me, that's buying money, 5-2.
Yeah, it is.
Victor, because I said, and I really need to find some wood, touching wood, as long as he stays fit, I think he's on the plane, because I think he's that good around the squad. I mean, I think Steve Holland said it at the Euros that he was the most important player in the squad for the mentality and the motivation and the organisation he was helping with the squad.
Do you know why that is as well, especially in a tournament and international camps, is when you're not playing, you'll have sort of the match day. The lads who didn't play, the next day they're expected to train while the other lads are doing recovery. And it can be a group that sulks a lot. Do you know what I mean? That they're annoyed they haven't played. The lads might have won and they're in running the next day. But I can just imagine Connor just driving standards in those sorts of sessions. And I think that's invaluable, because you need a happy squad. And I think he would massively help the manager and the coaches do that, definitely.
There was one thing that really scared me, kept me awake during the last year, I was Tom, is the thoughts that if England went to a penalty shootout, that Connor Cody had to take one. And if you know his recent record for Wolves and penalties, it isn't great, is it?
No.
I agree. I think that, I mean, that would be heartbreaking, wouldn't it? I mean, you would like to think that if that happens again in Qatar, and God forbid he has to step up and he misses, there's just something about him. I think he's just got that mental strength to be able to deal with those big moments. And that would be arguably the biggest moment of his career and potentially his life. But there's just something about his character and how positive he is and how much of a professional that he is that, you know, I mean, I'm thinking about it now. And if he had to step up, you would think that he had the belief that he would tuck it away. But as I said, you know, with recent kind of historical form, you know, there is a doubt there. But I think he's got the mental strength to be able to either to tuck it away or deal with it if it doesn't go that way as well. But obviously I'd feel so, so awful for him. And yeah, I would be kind of living every moment of that with him as well. In fact, that's given me a little bit of anxiety now. So maybe we should move on.
I think it's just one of those, just pick your spot and put your laces free. You didn't ever take a penalty for Wolves, did you, Dave?
No, I took three or four in shootouts for Wolves. But I remember the one game where I was in that last season under Paul Lambert, I was on penalties from probably about the November time. We just didn't get one ever. I was gutted. And we played Barnsley away, and I'd scored officially one before half time, but I thought it was two, but Courtney House had nicked one off the line from me. So I thought I was on a hat trick. We got given a penalty. So I've got the ball thinking I'm going to score a hat trick. Never done it before. This would be incredible. Must have stood there for about 2 minutes. Referee started deliberating with the linesman and they overturned it. And I was devastated. So I managed to get another goal that game, but it only worked out two. Whereas if I'd have had that penalty, I might have got my only ever hat trick.
And that might have been the difference between you and Helder finishing joint top scorer in the league.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. would have done. Helder deserved it. He deserved it that season. He carried us.
He did from a technical point of view, but your goals were just as key, Dave. Some key goals that season. The QPR one away, I think, was a big one, and the finish was quite decent.
Yeah, that was one of my favourites that season. That was, it was nice. I must say, it took a little bounce just before it got to me. I was going for bottom corner, but it just bobbled a little bit and ended up going to the top corner, so it looked a lot better.
Ever modest, Dave. Gully in the comments section has just asked, can Dave shed any light on Wayne Hennessy's acrimonious departure in the wake of his 100th cap last night? I mean, Wolves fans are still a bit salty about how Wayne Hennessy left the club, but 100 caps for any country is a great achievement, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I can't even remember the scenario that he left under now. I remember, oh, was it League One, wasn't it? And he didn't play at Gillingham away. Was that just before January? I can't remember. I can't remember the internet.
He was a Premier League goalkeeper in League One, wasn't he, Dave? Wolves fans never want to see a player leave, but he shouldn't have been in that division, should they?
No, and obviously he's brilliant for the academy, come through, and he's got 100 caps for his country. I think the academy can be really proud, and we were really lucky that period of time. We had a real good run of goalkeepers, didn't we? We had obviously Matt Murray, who unfortunately had the injuries, but then we had Carl Hakimi and Wayne, who were the same age, both coming through, and that's some standard of goalkeepers coming through the academy. But
Aaron McCarron never stood a chance, did he?
I know, yeah. It was always going to be tough, but Wayne, no, he's a terrific keeper, like top draw. He's very rarely makes a mistake. He's usually really solid, and he's been like that probably for every cap he's had for Wales. He's never let his country down. Just really, really solid. It's class for him. Unbelievable.
We spoke of Gareth Bale's free kick for Wales earlier on. Have you got any sort of connection or working alongside Tony Roberts, who's had a bit of big, quiet impact in both set pieces in both areas for Wolves this season?
Yeah, T Rob, as he's known, he's a great guy. Obviously, I knew him from Wales, and he was played a big part in the set pieces for Wales as well. He would take all the defensive and all the attacking ones and all the organisation before games, making sure everyone's aware of who they're marking and things like that. So really pivotal. And I know the lads think the world of Wolves. I spoke to Connor about him, absolutely loves him. He's the life and soul of the place. He's that sort of character, really bubbly. Now, I was speaking to John about him this morning, actually, asking what he thought of him. And again, John absolutely loves him, says his sessions for the keepers are so imaginative, keeps them on their toes. He's up there, one of the best coaches he's ever worked with. So, brilliant coach. But so you don't usually get goalkeeper coaches be so involved in the set pieces. They're usually there and thereabouts, but so he takes every single detail for Wales. And I imagine he does the same for Wolves. But up until maybe the last few weeks, Wolves have been pretty pretty unbelievable but definitely defensively. Didn't concede a set piece for a long, long time, did they, this season? So he's doing something right.
Game week 31 of the Premier League starts this weekend. Liverpool kick it off at home to Watford, a point behind Man City. I think this will be the weekend Liverpool seriously put pressure on Man City, with Man City travelling away to Burnley at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Wolves are home to Aston Villa, a game which probably key to Wolves is Man United at home to Leicester. Wolves could go a point behind Man United if before Man United kick off to Leicester. Any games stand out for you there, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the standout ones is, as you said, Liverpool are really going to put pressure on City. I can't see them doing anything else but win against Watford there, as long as Salah gets his vision back after what happened last night. But other than that, I'm looking at those fixtures. That United-Leicester game, that's a tough one to call. I think that Leeds-Southampton game could be lots and lots of goals. Southampton on great form and Leeds, wow. You know, we'll talk about them against us a bit later on, but can really play some mad football at times and just go completely hell for leather. But no, some good games. And, you know, we'll go on towards Aston Villa as well. But the one dead cert I can only really see there is Liverpool-Watford. Brighton on a poor run of form, and against Norwich, that's a difficult one to call as well.
Brighton, if they don't that's got to be their game to seal their safety, you think. But losing to Watford on Saturday puts them right in. I know they've got a bit of a cushion, but where's your money at the moment, Dave, on the three teams getting relegated?
I think it'd be that bottom three. The only ones I can see getting dragged into it is the Leeds and Everton. I think Brentford will pick up some results at home, so I think they'll be okay. My only one, I think Watford and Norwich will go. It's just Burnley. They always seem at some point in the season to just string a little run together. They've been in trouble quite a few times, but Sean Dyche should just go and win two or three on the bounce and drags them out of trouble. Massive, massive pressure on Everton. And you look at that game at West Ham, huge. That's going to be the interesting one. So I think it's three or five, but I think it will be that those bottom three. I don't know if Burnley have pushed their luck already over the years, and this might finally be the one where they can't put that run together.
That's my feeling at the moment. I think, like you just mentioned there, Dave, I think Burnley have finally overstayed their welcome. They've had a good few sort of great escapes, and the strikers don't seem to be as effective this season. Dwight McNeil hasn't had as productive a season as he's had in recent years. Where's your money on who's winning the title, Dave? One point between Man City and Liverpool at the moment. It's going right to the last game of the season. Liverpool at home to Wolves.
Yeah. The momentum seems to be with Liverpool, doesn't it, at the moment? But that when they play each other, that'll be the decider. I can't see them really slipping up too much all the way through. I think they'll put a lot of focus on the league. I know they're still both in Europe, but yeah, it's too close to call, isn't it? Which is, it's good, it's exciting. The last thing we wanted, which it looked like around Christmas time, was Man City to run away with it. So it's, for the neutral, it's good to see. But just look at that table, I'm just more gutted with Wolves. Those few games they threw away last month, it's taken them out of the running, where really they could be right up in fifth above Spurs, couldn't they? Quite easy could have turned two of those games around.
I think it's so sickening, the two defeats to Arsenal and the defeat to West Ham. If we would have just drawn all three of those games, it would have been just so much more pleasant to look at. And the natural pessimism of Wolves fans at home to Villa on Saturday, 10 points in front. We keep saying mind the gap, but I think that gap could get closer, couldn't it, Tom?
Yeah, I agree.
You look at Leicester as well. They've got three games in hand on us, 10 points behind.
Yeah, I know. It's scary. I mean, we could end up ninth. We could. I think the thing with the Villa game on the weekend is, as you said, the mind the gap joke's been going all season. But if Villa win against us, then it's just one of those really, really trepidatious parts of the season. And fortunately, we have seen ourselves kind of slowly slip away from the running. I think the Leeds game was really just, it was a real, real kind of final nail in the coffin. And arguably, you know, in a reflection of that is that we probably don't deserve to be up there if we're going to throw away Leeds like that. And, you know, as I said, we'll come on to talk about that. But yeah, I mean, if Villa win on the weekend, then I think it's safe to say that we can probably wave goodbye to the Europa Conference League, which I know we've all dreamt of seeing our team in since we were young boys. But it's one of those, and it's football. And I guess if we're going to take the kind of Welsh national team mentality, it's nice to just have a seat at the table and be considered to, well, people take us seriously as contenders at one point for the fourth spot. So overall, can't be too depressed about it. But yeah, a bit nervous about Villa on the weekend.
You're able to provide much optimism and encouragement, Dave, knowing the fact that we've lost Ruben Neves for the majority of the season now and losing Jimenez for the next two games.
Yes, yeah, it's not as optimistic as I was a few weeks ago, but I think if Wolves can finish eighth, it's been an amazing season and what is a transitional year. I think at the start of the year, before a ball was kicked, I do think a lot of fans were worrying for Wolves. Would they be down there? Could this be their year to get relegated? But I think it's been another level to what it was like under Nuno in the hole. They've obviously been a few inconsistencies, but that's to be expected. So it's been a really good season, and missing Ruben Neves in particular is going to be a blow. I think he's been the best midfielder in the league this year. I really do. The most complete. Looking how he's developed, how he's matured as a player, What a signing. 15 million, absolute bargain when you look back. But say it was a more of a punt back then. But he's come and he's fulfilled every little bit of potential we hoped he would have done. And like I said, I think the last couple of years he's become a lot more aggressive. The defensive side of his game, he wins a lot more tackles, he reads the game a lot better. But then his ability on the ball, passing range, shooting from distance, just the way he controls the tempo of a game. I think Wolves have never had a player like that. And say, just hope to God that they can keep him, because any club in the world should be trying to sign Ruben Neves. 24 years old, can do everything he does already. He's only going to get better. Like, I mean, every club should want him. And we're lucky he's at our club. And hopefully, I know he loves the place. Will that be enough to keep him long term? I'm not sure. Especially if Wolves don't match his ambitions and maybe go for it themselves a little bit, which, reading comments in the week from Scott Sellers, it doesn't seem like they're going to chuck a lot of money at it this summer. They're going to do it a little bit more strategically, which is fair enough. You wouldn't want to put the health of the club at risk, but Wolves need to keep continuing to build and get better and better to keep players like Ruben Neves. If not, as I said, every single club in the world will be waiting for him.
It still boggles me that he's still here after the season we didn't make Europe. So, I mean, did you always travel in from Shrewsbury to Wolves, Dave? Because I love Wolverhampton, but why does Ruben Neves love Wolverhampton so much?
It's because he hasn't experienced Shrewsbury. That's why.
He's travelled a bit further out in that lovely Shropshire area. What did you make of Scott Sellers' comments the other day, Tom, about if Bruno wants a player, but he doesn't, the deal doesn't get made?
Well, I mean, I can't say I'm completely surprised. I think if we look at some of the signings that we've made, and I think we can all agree that Fabio Silva, 35 million, you know, it's not something that Nuno's just been thinking about and him putting that amount of money and that specific player as a kind of key transfer target. And I think we're seeing it time and time again. I mean, it's disappointing. I kind of understand it, I guess, but it is frustrating as a fan who, as Dave says, wants to keep those players like Neves and keep them happy and keep them ticking over, because ultimately, and I guess I've never really thought about this before, but in a situation like a club, in a club situation like we have, we're not a Chelsea, we're not a Man City, we're not a Liverpool, where there is that kind of prestigious element to them where players just want to be there because they are a Liverpool player or they are a Chelsea player. With Wolves, it could really go either way. As Dave said, we were kind of probably being spoken about being relegated at the beginning of the season. So it's really important that we sign the right players so we keep our best players too. And I don't think that is similar for the clubs above us. I think that clubs above us can keep those players because they are those bigger clubs. But with Wolves, who, you know, there's an argument that we're maybe shooting above our weight, or, you know, we are exceeding expectations as a club. We need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep those players. And the Salah's comments, yeah, they worried me, I must admit.
I'm going to pull on your heartstrings for a moment here, Dave, because we've got a comment from Jack Mullins. Dave Edwards was a top player for us. Shame he never got a testimonial fixture.
Yeah. it was not, I'd say I was not there 9.5 years. So obviously just missed out. It was actually 11 seasons I was there, if you kind of, because I joined in January and left sort of once the season started. But yeah, it would have been nice. But obviously, couldn't stay around long enough. when Nuno came in, I kind of knew the writing was on the wall. So at that point, in hindsight, it might have been worth me waiting on 6 months, a year, and trying to really knuckle down and get in the team. Because I still think I'd have played games that year. But when I left, Wales were in a World Cup year and I thought my chances were going to be limited. I thought I need to be playing. And then from a financial point of view, I was off the back of my best season in a Wolves shirt. And I thought, if I'm going to move, now is the time to move. And I can sort of get a good contract somewhere. And kind of that's what happened. And it didn't quite work out for me at Reading. But yeah, bit gutted I didn't make that 10 years. It'd have been lovely to have a testimonial, but never mind.
Got a great reception now, didn't you, when you came back for Reading?
Yeah, amazing. I've got such a good relationship with the fans, which is nice, because during my career it was very up and down, and I kind of just tried to stay focused and cut out the noise. But I do feel the last two or three seasons, when I was, I think, a bigger part of the dressing room, because I've always been quite a quiet lad. I think I'm not one who's going to shout and bawl and things like that. Because I lived in Shrewsbury, I would not, and any other lads lived out here. So I kind of go to training, go back, and I've got a real good group of mates at home who I socialise with all the time. So I never really got involved in those football circles, which I think helped me in general. But so I was never a big person in the dressing room until those last two or three years, where I felt that, I think after that relegation to League One, I felt like I'd been pushed into a sort of a leadership role at the club. And then I felt like I really thrived after that and enjoyed being a big part of such a massive football club. I felt such an honour doing that. And at times that can take its toll, because say when you lose games and put in bad performances, I was always the one, Dave, you go speak to the press, you go and front it. I was kind of that guy, which was always difficult to do. But yeah, I love the way it evolved towards the end. I think by the time I left, it was perfect timing in a way that I left off the back of a good season, and the fans, I think, appreciated I think the work I put into the football. I wouldn't say ability and all those sorts of things, has been a lot better players than me at Wolves over the last 10-15 years, but I think they really appreciated my attitude to playing for their football club. And I was really proud to be able to wear that shirt for over 300 games. It was incredible.
No, yeah, I mean, from my perspective, Dave, I think as a football fan, and I know with the people that I watch Wolves with, I think all you really want, particularly when your club's going through a bad patch, getting relegated and relegated again, is you want those players that are committed to the club and play and stand in front of the press and take the flak and still seem focused. And I guess what I can say is, you know, throughout my teenage years and into going into my 20s, you know, you were one of those players that was there, that was working hard, popping up, scoring goals, and part of probably, yeah, the worst years of me as a fan at Wolves in regards to kind of where we were in the league positions and stuff. And it's safe to say that I think the rest of the fans see the effort you put in, and you know, you're all heart, and it's appreciated for sure.
Yeah, I think from a personal...
It's hard working, Dave. I think Wolverhampton is a tough city. People work their arses off for not a great income. And so seeing people who, like yourself, who are just honest, hardworking, just give 100% every game, whether, like you said, technically the best every single game, as long as you can put in the effort in, I think that's what fans expect as a minimum for the money they pay.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I was quite lucky being reasonably local to Wolves. I think I understood the dynamic of the city a little bit more than most people. I've got a lot of friends who work in Wolverhampton, and like you say, Monday morning, Wolves lose, the offices in Wolverhampton are a nightmare. I've got friends who kind of owners or managers at businesses, and they said Monday morning after Wolves lose, it is horrendous inside the office. On the flip side, it's amazing if they win. So I think I understood sort of how the people of Wolverhampton were a little bit better than a lot of people. And when we were going through that bad run, that double relegation, I had a couple of opportunities to move on and leave the club when sort of at the end of that championship season and the end of the League One season. But I kind of knew how lucky I was to be at a football club of that size. Anything I would have done would have been a sideways move. And I know I was under a lot more pressure at Wolves, but it's a huge, huge football club. Massive. And like you listen to Connor talk about it now, he's such a massive football club, and being a one club city, which means everything to the people of Wolverhampton. I think I subconsciously knew that, and I thought, if I'm lucky enough to be a part of it, I'm going to be here until they kick me out the door, and that's kind of what I did.
We beat Villa a couple of times during your career at Wolves, Dave. How did you find the actual rivalry with Villa?
It was good. I think it's very similar to the Birmingham one. The West Brom one was always had the edge to it, and there was you could feel the hatred in a West Brom game. You really could. Whereas Villa, I always thought it was just the atmosphere you could feel more than anything else. It wasn't like, yeah, Wolves Baggies is just like, you can feel the nastiness in the crowd. You can just feel that. But Wolves Villa, Wolves Birmingham, it just feels like a better atmosphere. And I used to love playing at Villa Park. I thought it's an amazing stadium. But I think where they put the away fans at Villa Park make it really special, because they're on the lower tier. They've got that kind of corner. And because they're closer pitch, you can hear them a lot more than what you say the Villa fans, and they're opposite to the whole end. So that was always special playing there. And then at Molineux, we've had some good games. I remember Joe Mason scored there one year when we won 1-0. I remember I did score against Villa at Molineux once in the Premier League, but it's when Robbie Keane scored that brace. I have nowhere. Carl Emery got sent off, didn't he, when we were 2-1 up.
Emmanuel Frimpong, that first half performance was one of the best performances I've ever seen in the Wolves shirt. He was ridiculous that first half.
He was. Is it that game he got injured in? Did he get injured in that game? Is it the one he did his eye in? Possibly.
He got kicked in the eye.
But yeah,
Carl Emery had a bit of a loose fuse, didn't he? And Mark Albrighton felt his wrath that day, I think it was. And then Robbie Keane just
does what Robbie Keane does.
Ridiculous finishes that day.
Yeah.
You mentioned about Villa Park and where the away fans are. You can see Conor Cody there in the bottom left-hand corner laughing towards screaming towards the Villa fans as we gave it large after Ruben Neves got the winner earlier on in the season. What's your sort of memories from that game, Tom, or was it a bit of a blur like me?
Yeah, a bit of a blur, really. I mean, I must admit, I wasn't at the game, but I was following it on my phone. I think I was out and about at the time, but I remember seeing it being 2-0 and kind of resigned myself to the notion that we'd lost that game or we might be able to scrape a draw. But yeah, when I saw that notification pop up my phone and we'd won 3-2, I must admit it was probably one of my highlights of the season, even though I wasn't there to see it myself. It's always good to get one over your rivals, particularly the Villa, who, I mean, there's lots and lots being said about Villa at the moment from all sorts of different people. And at the moment, there seems to be this feeling amongst Villa fans that they're now kind of knocking on the door and they're this new kind of club that's now an established Premier League team and is ready to push on. I'm not convinced by that. And I think it was good to kind of put them in their place a little bit, particularly after that ludicrous John McGinn celebration. But there you go. A good day for the Wolves.
What's your opinions on Villa this season so far, Dave? Obviously, Steven Gerrard's coming after Dean Smith for signing of Philip Coutinho. Suggests they're moving in the right direction as a club from an investment point of view, but 10 points behind Wolves at the moment.
Yeah, I think they're in a better place than what they were last season. I think Steven Gerrard's a good appointment. I think he's progressed the football club. But they spent a lot of money, haven't they? Do you know what I mean? When you look at them, and I do think with what Scott Sellers is saying and Wolves' approach to things, I do think the long-term health of Wolves will be a lot better. And I think they're building a stronger foundation to kick on from. They're not willing to go and break the bank just to try and just get into that. Whereas I think Villa, they've done that. They've taken quite a few punts on big money signings. And I say for the players they've got there, do think they should be doing maybe slightly better than what they are, but they are a work in progress. But I think Wolves as a football club is in a lot healthier and a lot better place than what Villa are at the moment.
What's your feelings on esports, Dave?
On esports?
You've got a young lad who must be involved in that sort of area, mustn't he?
He loves his FIFA from Fortnite.
So have a look at the form table. Obviously, Villa have won 3 out of their last 5. Wolves have won 2 out of the last 5. You look at some of the stats on the right. Wolves average 1.03 goals a game. Villa average 1.41. Wolves have got more clean sheets, which I think was one of Villa's main sort of attributes to where they finished in the league last season. But how do you see this game going, Tom?
I'm nervous, mate, I must admit. It's a really, really hard one to call. The thing with Wolves at the moment, for some reason, I'm just thinking back to the Leeds game, and I can't remember the last time that happened at home. Comfortable lead and just throw it away. And going into this kind of game against Villa, which is going to be a huge, huge game, it's going to be one of the biggest home games of the season. I would like to think that we'll win, but I really can't call it. And, you know, I'm having these kind of little devil on my shoulders telling me that maybe Villa could nick it. But the optimist in me is saying, well, I'm thinking it's going to be 1-1, maybe even 0-0. It's going to be a tight fixture. I think particularly because we're missing Jimenez and we're missing Neves and, you know, Neto and all the rest of it, it could be a fairly, I don't want to say weak starting 11, but definitely not our strongest. And that
you look at our sort of lineup there from last game, like you mentioned, Tom, we're going to have sort of Ruben Neves and Jimenez missing. Do you see the back three staying the same, Bolly, Cody and Sace?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it might be good to get Kilman back in. Bolly played yesterday, didn't he, for the Ivory Coast. So maybe I could see Kilman being switched back in. But yeah, I know Sace played on the week as well.
Yeah, he played last night, didn't he, as well? They sealed qualification with a 4-1 win over Democratic Republic of Congo. Dave, looking back when you were at Wolves and when you went travelling away for Wales, how much sort of mentally does an international away camp have on you?
I think it depends how you do in terms of your results and things like that. I always felt if I had gone away and we'd done well for Wales and I personally done well, I'd come back with a real confidence. And I think that helps. But on the flip side, if you've had a tough time, it can work against you. The one negative is that you don't get as much time on the training field. So Jose Sal will be thinking about what he wants to do all the last 2 weeks, how he wants to line up. And he's got to wait to see who's fit and who's available. But you don't get much time on the pitch. I think they probably would have been back in today, if not tomorrow. And it's not a lot of time to get your work done. But Villa are in the same situation. But that first game after an international break is a little bit more difficult. And I think Wolves, when you look at the Villa game last time, that was straight after an international break as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and they were quite poor first half. Wolves got off to a slow start. So they need to make sure that doesn't happen. In terms of how the game goes, I think it's really difficult when you lose a Matino or you lose a Neves, they're not playing. I think Wolves struggle because I really do like Leandro Dendonca, but I don't think he plays well in a two. I think he needs to play in a three so he can use his legs a little bit more to break forward. He's got to be a lot more disciplined in a two, and then that's not his game. You need ball players in there when you go play a two. If you're going to be a possession-based team like Wolves, you need someone to sit in alongside Jao Moutinho and keep the ball moving. I just don't think it fits into the way Wolves want to play. But he's got no other options. I imagine he'll go 3-4-3 and play them two in there. That would be my only concern, that they don't look as strong when a Neves or a Moutinho doesn't play.
Gully, our tactical analysis for the Wolves fancast, has sent in his predicted team. He's got Dendonca and Moutinho in it too, like you've just reluctantly mentioned. Dave, how do you see the Wolves setting out as in the front three? Gully's got Poland, Fabio Silva and Huang there. What did you make of Francisco Trincao's performance against Leeds? Do you think he's deserving of a start against Villa on Saturday?
I mean, I think I'd eat humble pie a little bit. I thought Trincao was brilliant when he came on. Whether he can repeat that, I'm not too sure. I think we have to look at him in the context of the whole season and not that game, which we actually eventually went on to lose anyway. So his good work was in vain, really. But look, I mean, if we're talking about the season and how it's gone, and there is an argument that maybe we haven't got an awful lot to play for now. It could all change if we win this game on the weekends and results go our way. But I think I'd play Trincao just to see if he can do it again over Wang.
Dean Mars in the comment section has said the same. I think Trincao may play over Wang depending on how Wang is after his travels. I think South Korea played Iran and the UAE in the last week and won both games, but they'd already sealed qualification to Qatar 22. Like I said, the amount of Wolves players that could feature at Qatar 22 is ridiculous compared to how many we've had in recent tournaments over the years. You look at sort of the predicted lineup for Villa there. Lucas Digne played 90 minutes for the French side last night, so he's expected to come back in for Ashley Young. Philip Coutinho's the big worry, isn't he, Dave?
Yeah, he's the one who can make things happen. He can make the difference. He looks like he's fully up to speed now as well, doesn't he? I think if they play that team, I can imagine him playing more off the left and maybe Ollie Watkins going out to the right and Danny Ings through the middle. That's kind of how they look to line up last time when they were attacking. Must say I like Ramsey as well. I think his legs in midfield have been very, very good for them, and he's been a revelation this season. But Coutinho, if you can keep him quiet, you've done half the battle. He is their spark of creativity. So, and that's again why it probably worries me that Wolves won't be playing three in midfield. There'll be quite a few spaces down the sides of Dendonk and Martino, and I think it'll be difficult for the back three because there's going to be points where they're going to have to come out and engage. And you can see in the past, Wolves don't necessarily like that. They like to be in a flat line. They like to be narrowed together. If they're having to jump out and try to get to Coutinho or trying to get to Danny Ings, who will drop into the pocket as well, I think that's where that extra midfield would really help Wolves.
I pushed for it a few weeks back, Tom. I'd like to see if Wolves go to a three midfield. And since his performance away at Tottenham, I'm not sure how he hasn't featured, but Luke Kundal back in a midfield three.
Kundalino, mate. It could happen. It could definitely happen. I'd like to see it. I mean, as you said, I'm repeating myself, but there is an argument that our season is quote-unquote maybe done in regards to chasing some kind of European spot, so it could be a good opportunity to get the likes of Kundal, Jaquino, get them a little bit more experienced in, on the pitch and playing in the Premier League so that we can maybe utilise them a bit more next season if what Scott Sellers is true and we're not going to be signing a lot of big money signings, and we might need to utilise those players more next season. So yeah, get them on, see what they can do.
I hate this part of the show, but this is the part where I ask for your score predictions, guys. So try not to jinx Wolves, but I'll come to you first, Dave.
I'm going to go for 2-1 Wolves. So there'll be goals, and if Wolves come on the right side of it. And I think after being 2-0 up last 2 weeks ago and losing, I do think that Bruno Lage learns from mistakes that he does make. So I can't see that happening again. So I think they'll be a lot more solid at the back. So 2-1.
What about you, Tom?
I think it's going to be 1-0, Fabio Silva penalty, Mings foul.
It's my birthday weekend, guys. If Fabio Silva, who scored last night, and I put it on our social media today, he has to start Saturday because we need a focal point. I know he's still like bulking up as a young lad, but we just need a striker who knows how to play on the shoulder, just run the line. We need that focal point for me. There's no one else we've got who can do that apart from the boy wonder Fabio Silva. Wolves have drawn 4 games this season. Villa have drawn 3. I'm going for a 0-0 this Saturday. I just think, I'm not sure where our goals are coming from unless Fabio Silva finally kicks into gear and the rest is history and he goes on to be the player that Football Manager predicted him to be. Dave, tell us a little bit more about In the Stiffs and then I'll just show a brief clip of the show before we start our quiz.
It's like I said, it's a podcast that me and two of my old Shrewsbury mates have started. We just wanted to give a bit of an insight to probably lower league football, and so we've all played at completely different levels throughout our careers as well. So a real good range of what happens inside dressing rooms and stories and things like that. And then more recently, we've had a couple of guests on. We had Connor Cody on, who was great value, trying to not just look for stories like you'd expect. Say a lot of podcasts do that, or a lot of sort of football podcasts do that. They just look for the funny stories. You want to try and get a little bit deeper and kind of sort of make footballers a little bit more human and show that they're just real people and show that they are good people as well, because you don't understand that when you're found that when you're sat next to them in the dressing room, they're just a normal lad. And we're trying to get that across and obviously get an insight to things that people wouldn't know as well, things that hopefully Wolves fans wouldn't have known about Connor Cody, things about the inner workings inside of Wolverhampton Wanderers. And I think that came across well. And then the Joe Hart one we just done, that was incredible to record. It was over 4 hours of audio, sort of really went into immense depth of his career, fascinating stuff, the highs, the lows, and again shows what a good person. I think Joe more than Connor, I think he's got this reputation of being a little bit arrogant and things like that, just because of the way he's been portrayed in the media. And that is 1,000,000% not true. He's such a good guy. He's humble. He'll do anything for you. As long as you treat him with respect, he'll give you all of his time. And I think that comes across really well in that podcast as well. So it's good to see, to get their own personalities out there as well, rather than what they're portrayed on the television as.
Yeah, I did really enjoy the one episode of Joe Hart I listened to. I think you look at that one clip where I think it was the one England tournament where he was bashing the advertising boards, asking for the ball back, and you think he's a bit intense. But from what I gather, he's one of the most just light-hearted, just carefree sort of footballers you can find.
He is, and you speak to any of his teammates and they'll all say exactly the same. They all love him. They do. I mean, Matt Doherty messaged me a few weeks ago when he found out that Joe's on the podcast. He's like, oh, what an amazing guy he is. And he's got that reputation in football, but it's not portrayed to the average football fan, because that's the way the media does crazy things. Do you know what I mean? And especially when you're an England player, especially when you're England number one, that they're going to be coming for you. And that's kind of what's happened with Joe in the past. But yeah, lovely lad who just loves playing football. At the heart of it, he just loves playing football. And that's kind of been taken away from him in recent years. And I think he's found it hard to deal with. And he goes through that in the podcast. So it's fascinating.
You can find Dave Edwards, Gav Cohen and Sam Aston at In The Stiffs on all the social media channels and YouTube. We'll show a quick clip, which is how Connor Cody seduced Nuno on the plane. And then we'll do our quiz.
And Nuno came in.
Yeah.
And Nuno loved you straight away, didn't he?
Yeah, I got on really well with him. Really, really well with him.
Somebody said, Connor, it was something about a plane journey or something from Austria or something, and that's when you and him came for the first time.
There's you dropping stories.
I can say is that...
all the lads with the back of the plane.
Is this you dropping stories?
No. So Coates had played right back the year before, and then...
like, not out of position, not...
Somehow he's got his onboarding pass at the airport to go to Austria. He sat next to Nuno, spent 2 hours next to Nuno on the flight.
Got off the plane with the captain.
Playing a sweeper.
Hey, come on, whatever you got to do, mate. Whatever you got to do, it's dog out there.
We won't judge. That's about right.
It's a dog out there.
Really enjoying the episodes again at In The Stiffs on all the social media channels, YouTube, and all the reputable podcast outlets out there. We'll do our quiz now, sponsored by Pixel Yeti Media. I've got 4 questions this week, and it's predominantly Dave Edwards based. So anything that Tom doesn't get right, Dave, I'll be expecting you to get it right. The first question, Tom, what shirt number did Dave Edwards wear when he first joined Wolves?
Oh, mate.
Memories there, Dave, scoring that goal away at Scunthorpe?
Yeah, my debut, that was.
John Murphy, the goalkeeper, didn't have one of his greatest moments, but it all came down to Dave.
No, and I played with Murph at Shrewsbury as well a couple of years ago, and I always remind him that. He's done me a solid favour there.
Set you on your way. Yeah. Shirt number, Tom?
22.
Oh, it was close, wasn't it, Dave? But do you want to tell him the right answer?
26.
Correct answer was 26.
We had a big squad when I arrived in January, and that was the first one available.
I'm going to put you on the spot again here, Tom, because you forgot it. Well, I'm giving you the answer here. Who was number 4 at that time?
Number 4 at that time. Oh, God.
Top player he was. Top player.
Top player. Number 4. Top player. Oh, God. This is really, really, really spot now. Mate, let's think about that. I don't know. Lee Naylor? Oh, no. He would have gone by then. I don't know.
You forgot about him 2 weeks in a row, Tom. Sage on the Finjana. Right.
Dan, mate, you can't keep doing this.
Sorry. This is how my quiz goes, Tom. There's a bit of a video here. I think Dave will remember the goal, but everyone knows how the game ended when we beat Wolves 4-3 at Molineux. But how did the reverse fixture finish that season at Elland Road, and who scored for Wolves? Was that an out-of-body experience, that goal, Dave?
That's the best moment I've had on a football pitch, that was. Yeah. yeah, it was just incredible. Like, I remember saying after the game, if you just bottled that 15 seconds up, oh, it'd be incredible. It was, because I think it was so much. It was Easter Monday, wasn't it, the game, and that got us into the playoffs, and we felt like we were the form team then. We thought we was going to get in there, and unfortunately, it didn't quite happen. We lost at Blues the following week, which killed us. But we're the most ever points not to get in the playoffs, weren't we? 78, was it? Incredible.
The Blues defeat and the draw against Ipswich at home really scuppered us towards the end. Was that obviously 4-3. The atmosphere was huge. Any other sort of atmospheres that stand out for you during your career at Molineux?
QPR when we won the league. That was pretty special. I remember after Sylvain scored to take us 1-0 up, the next 10 minutes was just electric in there. They were singing that We Shall Not Be Moved song, and it was, yeah, that was probably the best one after that.
I think we started singing that we cannot be moved away at Forest when we won 1-0 when Coitley scored in every single game from that weekend. That it was, like you said, that was just an iconic song.
It was all
song
on the flags, wasn't it, and everything.
We was not going to be moved once we got in that top spot. I mean, every time, we had a bit of fortune, because every time we lost that season, Reading and Blues both lost.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
But yeah, we deserved it in the end. You don't finish top of the league if you don't deserve it. Let's go back to that question, Tom. Do you remember the reverse fixture from that season, Leeds against Wolves? What was the score and who scored for Wolves?
I'm going to go 1-1, Benikofobi.
Oh, you've gone way too ahead of there, haven't you? Dave?
I'm trying to remember which season. I've got a feeling, is it the one where Clarkie scored? Leon Clark?
It was Leeds 1, Wolves 2. And Leon Clark scored the winner, like Dave just said. James Henry got the other goal. I'm glad you remembered that game and who scored, Dave, because do you remember coming off at half-time?
Yeah, we're 1-0 down and he went for... I was always the one. So I'd play a 10 usually under Kenny. So it'd be like a 4-4-1-1. And whenever we were losing, I'd be straight off and they'd bring a striker on to go 4-4-2. And that's what happened. And it worked. Fair play to him. It worked. I think Liam came on, didn't he? We were 1-0 down at half-time and then Lenny scored a scrappy goal. Then Leon scored and... Yeah, I remember him wheeling away to the Wolves fans just to the right-hand side after he scored.
Played alongside Leon Clark recently at Shrewsbury.
Yeah, for a little bit, yeah. Yeah, he was there. So still the same, Leon. He's quite a quiet lad, but really, really nice guy and good finisher. He's had some career, really, when you think about when he left Wolves all those years ago. He kind of went down the leagues a little bit, but bounced back really well. And he's had a top career.
Question 3. Who scored? Obviously, Sylvain Ebanks-Blake turned 36 yesterday. Who scored more goals in the FA Cup for Wolves, Sylvain Ebanks-Blake or Dave Edwards, Tom?
Well, the man's here, so I've got to go Dave Edwards, surely.
Do you know the answer, Dave?
No. So I think if I scored, I remember scoring a couple against Fulham at Molineux in the snow. Do you remember that game?
Yeah.
I can't remember if I scored any more.
The correct answer was Dave Edwards with 2 goals.
Oh, it was just those
Sylvain,
two.
Sylvain Ebanks-Blake did not score a goal in the FA Cup for Wolves. I found out yesterday.
That's a shocking statistic.
9 times he played for Wolves in the FA Cup and didn't score once. But if you look back, we were pretty terrible in the FA Cup during the 2010s, weren't we?
Yeah, we didn't do well up until that season where we beat Liverpool. And then we had Chelsea in the 5th round, was it? We beat Stoke and Liverpool, didn't we? That was the only real cup run I had with Wolves.
Yeah, quite a memorable cup run. I mean, the Stoke 2-0 away was proper unreal performance. Carl Akimi was literally a wall that day, wasn't it?
Oh, mate, unbelievable.
Mark Owen-Edwards still has nightmares about Akimi, I think.
Morgan Gibbs-White came on, didn't he, that game for his debut, only 16. And then Doc scored a free kick, didn't he? Yeah. Some day that was.
Unleashed his David Beckham that day. It was a ridiculous free kick in the top left-hand corner. The last question is, and this is I'm not even expecting you to get this, Dave. It's a bit of a difficult one. On 14th of January 2008, Wolves signed Dave Edwards from Luton Town. But what Wolves defender left to join Leicester City on a free transfer that same window? We had a couple of questions as well, Dave, in the on the Twitter. Do you regret the highlights?
Yeah. Of course, but it was very fashionable back then. Andy Keogh, Richard Stearman. Yeah.
the picture of you on the left there, Dave, I'm not sure whether it's like you envisaged that question before it happened or whether you put a shift in that there. Do you want to have a guess at the defender that joined Leicester City, that same transfer Dave joined? So, do you remember any defenders being waved goodbye that January, Dave?
Jamie Clapham? Is it him?
I can't knock you, Dave. That's why we love you. You're hardworking. Just get all the basics right. I can't knock you, Dave.
I never expected to get that. That's why I came to you first. Yeah, I couldn't remember him where he went to, but I remember him being there for a very short time when I was there. So, yeah, that was the only one I had in my mind.
Thanks to everyone that's joined us tonight. Wolves Fancast, part of the 90min.com network. Just going to put Dave a little bit on the spot before we end it tonight. I'm just going to give you three Wolves players during your Wolves career. I just want you to either give like a one-word reply of what you thought of them or just a little story. First one is Carl Emery.
Rash. more of a leader. Proper captain. Carl was proper captain. He would have the difficult conversations on behalf of the lads all the time. So even if it jeopardised, I remember him, the amount of times he went and spoke to Mick about things that the lads wanted to get across the manager, but he would have made himself it had made Mick question him, but he would always back the lads on every single occasion. He was proper captain. And I think when it got taken off him, I think that was probably Mick's biggest mistake, I think, in his time, because Mick was unbelievable for the club, but should never have lost the captaincy, Carl.
Second one is Ruben Neves.
Magician.
you can't describe him any other way, can you, Tom?
No, he's ineffable. Absolutely. There's almost no words. I think Magician puts it quite lightly. Revelation as well for 15 million. Like, absolutely.
If our viewers will, I'm imploring you to keep listening to the In the Sticks podcast. I've heard you describe Stefan Meyerhoff, a Dave that can catch that in one of the episodes. The third player for me is Jeffrey Mujanji Bia.
Jeff. He had some talent, the boy did. Guys, loads of talent, but yeah, didn't like hard work, I don't think, Jeffrey.
Misunderstood.
Yeah, misunderstood. He was, he didn't speak much English. He'd produce some absolute mad moments in training of brilliance, but you wouldn't have been able to play Jeffrey or play him a lot in the proper game, just because there's no way you could trust him, because so I don't think he understood much English. And you wouldn't, if you're going into the last 10 minutes of the game 1-0 up, he's not the sort of player you would trust to dig in and track his fullback all the way. He'd just switch off, and not the hardest working player.
That's it for tonight's episode, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for those who commented. Hopefully we'll be back on Sunday with a podcast, hopefully with a good result over the Villa. We'll catch you soon.